There we go.
Okay. Thank you, Monica, and good morning. It is September 10th, 2024. We land on these days that wind up being like, having meaning outside of the Buddhist recovery class, but we're not here so much to reflect on the historical moment as just the present moment as it is. I have been, I was saying before we started to record that I've been doing a lot of physical work building up for my upcoming knee surgery. And so I actually have a PT appointment right after this. And it's very interesting. I think maybe I should have started exercising when I was younger. I might have gotten strong. Who knows? I usually just injure myself. So there's that.
Hey, Kevin, just real quick, those good walk spoiled thing that you do once in a while, that
Yeah.
don't discount that. You're getting a 5, 6 mile walk in every time you do that. So
Yeah.
keep that in mind, all right?
Thank you, Bill.
Gotcha.
And I currently am using the assistance of an electrified vehicle in order to do that, but it still does involve some walking. And I had quite a nice round yesterday at Karika Park. Had this beautiful birdie on the 10th hole, 165 yards. Lands on the front of the green, runs up to 3 feet from the hole. One of those ones where you're like,
Yeah, I know.
ah.
I didn't have any of those yesterday. I was ready to throw them in the lake. So
Yeah,
anyway,
well,
I'll talk to you later about
yeah, right. Well,
that. Just start walking all of every day.
all of every day, just walk continuously. Well,
Walk
yeah.
all of every day.
Oh, walking all of every day. Yes. Oh, right. Yeah, I think that'd be more like getting dragged by Olive. Steve is referring to the neighbor's dog. So this has become a very like inside baseball kind of in the weed. If you haven't been around, you don't know what we're all talking about. What's he talking about? A walk? Okay, folks. We're going to start with some meditation, and I actually have a nice theme that I got from Ajahn Sumedho, a little reading I did this morning to juice myself up. So, I mean, in the Dharma sense, not in any other sense. So let us begin with some sitting, and I'll give some guidance as usual. Most of you are familiar, and then let there be some quiet towards the end. So this is about 20 minutes. So we begin by just establishing awareness of our posture. Each of us here is sitting in our own personal space, not like being together. So just being aware of how you're holding your body, maybe just the feeling of the cushion or chair or couch that you're sitting on. Well, can be helpful just to take a little time to get comfortable. Because ideally, once we're establishing posture, we want to remain still. We want to make sure that it's a comfortable, viable posture that we're sitting in. And then having a sense of relaxing, settling the body. And we use the breath as part of this process. So Softening the belly and letting the shoulders release any tension. We actually have a natural capacity to relax, to settle, and we just try to learn how to tap into that with mindfulness. And then feeling the breath moving in the body. Mindfulness of breathing can be approached in different ways. We can focus on particular sensations, the nostrils or the belly, getting very close and intimate with the breath. And we can also just be more aware of the general experience of breathing, of the body moving and being touched by breath. When the Buddha refers to the length of the breath as something to pay attention to. Of exploring for yourself how you can use the breath as a doorway to mindfulness, a support of calm and concentration. There isn't a right or wrong way. We're not viewing the breath as this precious thing we have to approach correctly. We're just trying to be awake and aware. And the breath is a tool for supporting that. And we find oftentimes when we try to pay attention to the breath, we discover the busyness of the mind, the unruly quality of the mind that won't let us even relax enough to be aware of breathing. Just keeps dragging our attention away. And so it takes patience to keep returning to the breath, to the body, the present moment. It takes an attitude of acceptance, even of kindness. Not struggle with our own mind. We let go of expectations about what should happen when meditating or what we should be able to do. Instead, we just observe what is happening. If we try to stay with the full length of the breath, this can support our stabilizing the mind. Aware of the whole in-breath, aware of the whole out-breath, aware of any spaces between the end of the breath. Beginning of the next breath. So, not just knowing we are breathing, but aware of the whole experience of breath. Okay. Welcome again. I am Kevin Griffin. We've been at this little Zoom meeting for about 4.5 years. Suppose everything is impermanent, but it's one of the longer lasting things. Just it was interesting just sitting and feeling my energy sort of settle and settle and settle. And I opened up the More Than Mindfulness book that I've talked a lot about this morning, hoping to find some inspiration, and immediately did. Ajahn Sumedho has a chapter in there about, it's called The Five Spiritual Faculties, and the first one is faith. And I just stopped there. That's what I'm going to talk about. But they also include energy and concentration. And one of the sort of distinctive qualities of these five things, and I should list them: mindfulness, faith, wisdom, energy, concentration. The distinctive aspect of them is that, other than mindfulness, the other four are pairs that balance each other. Faith and wisdom balance each other, and energy and concentration balance each other. So when you sit down to meditate and you feel energized, and your mind starts to get calm, your body gets calm, and then you find yourself falling asleep, then it's like, oh, too much concentration, not enough energy. So, but I wanted to take up faith because it's a topic that, I've certainly talked about a lot over the years, and it's one that is really relevant to, certainly to recovery and the 12 steps, as well as to the Dharma, and then to larger issues in society and in our world. Starting with just the recovery element, we know that step two in the 12 steps is we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. So we see right away that some kind of faith is really important, and the steps start with this admission of powerlessness, which is not a statement of faith. It's a statement of our experience that this isn't working, but we don't know that, that our life as addict, that our addictive behavior isn't working, but we don't know how to change that. And so when we encounter the 12 steps say, well, we're going to offer you a way, and it involves this higher power. And so right away there's this question of trust. So in Buddhism, the word they translate as faith is sadha, Saddha, and it has more of an implication of trust or confidence. But we're in this position, right, of not knowing. And this is a really critical moment, in our lives, in spiritual practice, and many things. It's like, what do we do in that moment of not knowing? And there can be the tendency to grasp onto some hope. Oh, okay, this is gonna take care of me, Or there can be that skepticism. Oh, there's no way. There's nothing that can help me. We fall into despair, or there's just skepticism. And of course, many of us, and I think probably a lot of the people in this particular cohort of Dharma and recovery, are people who have developed skepticism about religion and around religious faith, so that even the word faith can be alienating to us. And in a society, a culture that values sort of science and empirical knowledge over just believing, that makes sense. And yet, in order to step into a process like recovery or meditation practice, we have to start with not knowing and with some kind of trust. So it's a vital thing. We really will never even engage if we don't have some faith in this unknown process, these unknown powers. And so we can see that the beginning of any path really depends upon faith, and it's so that for those of us who, or we could say people who can't sort of do this, there is this lack of faith. There's this skepticism, resistance to the possibility of change. And so that we see that this question of faith first has two dimensions: faith in something outside ourselves, and then faith in ourselves. So in the 12 steps, faith in a higher power, but I prefer to think of it just as faith in the process that's being laid out in the steps. Faith in the idea that there is a process that can heal us, the belief. And if we start from with the stance of I could never do it, I can't change, then we won't engage. And so it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, right? So that's why faith is so important in the beginning. Now, in Buddhism, we talk about these different types of faith, that we start with what's called bright faith, a sort of inspiration that's really driven by hope, possibility, but really not any experience or knowledge. And I think we have the same thing in the recovery world. We call the pink cloud we talk about. You jump in, and it's like, and things start to really unfold for you. Things get better right away. And in Buddhism, maybe you go to a retreat, or you're reading some Dharma, you start to meditate, and it's exciting. These teachings, these ideas, are they make so much sense, and they connect so much for you. And there's this real engagement. And that can function as a really positive kind of launching pad for our practice and for our recovery, that we really get going. We really embrace it and take it on, 90 meetings in 90 days, and get a sponsor, or get into Dharma and start. We talk about 90 sittings in 90 days, like meditate every day and start going to groups. And really important and valuable to have that kind of feeling as we start to get involved in practice. Now, Buddhism then talks about this next stages of faith, where we start to verify, which happens again both in recovery and in Buddhist practice, that after a while, it starts to really work. In recovery, our life really starts to change. We start to see how maybe we don't feel the same compulsion to use. We feel connected to a community. We're able to show up for our lives, and even our inner life is changing. We're not so agitated. So we start to see that now I'm not just believing. It's not just a faith now, it's verified. It's something we've experienced for ourselves. And certainly the same thing happens with Dharma practice. And you hear about meditation, it sounds really cool, and then you start out and can be like, wow, nothing's happening. But eventually, hopefully, you start to have some experiences, maybe of calm and peace, or some clarity, or some insights. Some you start to become more mindful in your life. Maybe the heart practices resonate for you. You start to feel more connected and loving, compassionate. And you start to realize I'm really changing. And here then we have the beginnings of this idea of verified faith, which, as I say, isn't really faith at all. It's the experience now. And that doesn't stop, right? Because things keep changing. We may hit a wall. And again, this happens in recovery as well. Oh, wow, like maybe 5, 10 years sober, you're like, I'm getting depressed, or I lose my job, or a relationship falls apart. And it's like, wow, maybe this doesn't really work. Maybe, or maybe I'm doing something wrong, or maybe I need something more. And again, this happens with meditation, with Dharma practice, that we fall into these fallow periods where it just feels like things have dried up. You're not really inspired. The concentration's not really there. You sit down and just spend the whole time ruminating. And here we're hitting that sort of second level of practice where we have to go beyond just being inspired and the excitement of it, and start to see that, well, life presents these challenges, and what do I do about it? And if we're devoted, if we've laid that foundation, we have this other level of faith that, like, oh, I can get through this. It's going to be okay. And of course, one of the key insights that hopefully we've had through Dharma practices, oh, everything is impermanent, and these meditation experiences, my recovery process, it's not just one of a constant rise into more and more bliss. It's always going to present challenges, but if I stay with it, that I'll be okay. And there's this built part of that also depends if we've developed more faith in ourselves. We trust ourselves. We know that we can get through difficult things. I have this feeling about my daughter. When she was in high school, she was a basketball player, and she got onto the varsity team as a sophomore. And by the time she was a junior, I think it was her junior year, she wasn't getting much playing time. And she had been very committed and just showing up and very supportive. Even when she wasn't playing, she'd be cheering on the other players. But then there was one night when I saw her sitting on the bench, and she wasn't getting out on the floor to play. And instead of really cheering, she was looking down, and she looked discouraged and surprised and worried about her. And after the game, she said, "Well, I've decided to leave the team because I'm not a good fit. I don't, they're not giving me playing time. I think I could contribute, but it's not working. And I've tried. I've spent a couple of years really showing up and doing that work." And then she said, "I'm going to join the debate team." My head was like, "You're what? We're what? Where are we going now?" So I was used to being like the dad and in the stands cheering. I'm like, okay, how do I have to cheer for the debate team? And the next day, literally, she signed up for the debate team, which had been courting her, it turned out. So, and what I saw in that moment was this resilience. And it gave me tremendous faith in my daughter. And so she's going through job challenges right now, working for a lame duck congressperson, and it's hard for her, but I know she's going to be okay because I've seen her, how she handles transitions. And I reminded her, as she's in this, of her own resilience, and trying to remind her to trust in herself. So just was so striking to me, like, oh, because as I always say, like, if that had been me, I would have quit the team and then spent 2 weeks in bed, depressed about the whole thing, and ruminating about what a failure I was. Instead, she was like, oh, this isn't working. I need to do this. And as I say, it gave me great faith in her because I saw how she handled things. So we can get this for ourselves as well. If we've been in recovery for a while, done a Dharma practice for a while, if we reflect on when we hit a challenging moment, reflect on, oh, I've gotten through difficulties before. I got sober. Like if you got sober or came into recovery of any kind, you've conquered something that very few people can conquer. And so just to remember that when you hit those walls, like, oh, I'm going to be okay. I will be okay. I can handle this. So this is kind of just the outline of faith that I like to kind of start with, because I also then want to talk about the I guess I'll just say the dark side of faith. I was reading an article about Chogyam Trungpa and his, yeah, I can only call it a cult. And if you're familiar with Trungpa, he was a Tibetan Buddhist teacher who was really an important teacher, one who helped a lot of people and taught the Dharma to a lot of people back in the 70s, particularly. He actually introduced Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein to each other at the Naropa Institute in 1974, and really respected. But he started this community called Shambhala, but there was a real dark side to it. He was an alcoholic and really, I mean, I'd call him a sex addict. That's not, but he was acting out sexually as well. And he eventually died of alcoholism. He died of cirrhosis of the liver at the age of 47. So it's not just me saying, oh, he was an alcoholic because people said he drank a lot. He died of alcoholism. There's no, question about it. And nobody can really deny that. But the reading this recent, I think it was a recent article that Don Latin, my friend who used to be the religion writer for the San Francisco Chronicle, he forwarded this article. I can find it if people want to see it. It was shocking because I knew that there'd been a lot of problems in that community, but this was took it to a level that I had not really known about. But on this topic of faith, the point I'm getting at is that you can see in, and I've known this for a long time, that many people had this delusional faith in him. And despite the fact that all the evidence that he was really dysfunctional and harming people, that people continued to hold him up as an enlightened being or a living Buddha. And I talked to Ajahn Amaro one time about this, and he said, you just can't be enlightened and behave like that. And of course, this is belief, right? Because there are people who believe and continue to believe that, oh, that was like all, he was known for crazy wisdom, that he was enlightened. It was all a lesson. He was teaching us a lesson, and I don't know what they think the lesson was, something about that you can be an alcoholic and still be enlightened, I guess. But it reminds me of my own experience where I followed this, homeless guru that I talk about in One Breath at a Time. He called himself Ananda. And I was caught up in deluded faith. Here was this person who just walked into the bookstore I was working in and said, oh, I can get you enlightened if you'll just follow me. And, I left my job, I left my apartment, I left my band, I just walked out on all of it because, oh, this guy's going to fix me, he's going to solve my problems. And, this, so the point being that faith has to be balanced with wisdom in the traditional Buddhist teaching. And another way of putting this is, discernment, wise discernment. And it's interesting, in the Buddhist world, there can be this idea that you shouldn't judge people or you shouldn't judge thing, you know, you should, and which to me is like, what do you mean you shouldn't judge things? Like, because we know, like, there's this quality of judging that is, you know, ego-centered. You're bad, I'm good, or that's stupid, and I'm, you know, whatever, you know, okay, fine. There is this ego-centered judgment. But discernment and wisdom require a kind of judgment. You can, whatever term you want to use, I'd call it discernment, I think is a great term. Wisdom is another term for it. Questioning. And so we don't want to be foolish in our faith. You know, the same thing happens with loving kindness and compassion. Oh, we should be compassionate to everyone. You know, I was recently drawn into a conversation about a teacher who I am familiar with, who has done some unwholesome actions, and who I have seen over many years act in a certain way. And so people are like, oh, but we should, you know, we should talk to this person if they want to be involved with our community. And, you know, and there maybe we should, you know, be forgiving and compassionate. I was like, you know, I've seen too much. You know, there's a certain point at which you say, no, like, won't get fooled again. It's a good, you know, if we're going to draw from the lyrics, which are, there's always some wise lyrics out there, you know. And obviously, you know, one can, it's hard to talk about such a subject because we're kind of talking about cults and we're talking about people being deluded in their faith. And it's hard to talk about that in our current society without thinking of the one of the current, you know, presidential candidates who sort of evokes the same kind of delusion and sort of asks for the same kind of belief. And you know, it's the same thing as conspiracy theories and all these sort of things. It's like, I mean, to me, recovery implies and demands a kind of a discernment to go along with our faith. You know, if we just believe, you know, have this, it's great. Open-hearted, thought, you know, loving, but we have to take care of ourselves, you know. And I think, you know, I think folks in Al-Anon have this probably better than a lot of other programs, because it's like really a key idea in Al-Anon. Like, you've got to have boundaries. You've got to protect. You've got to, you know, see if someone harms you, you don't keep letting them in the door, right? And so this winds up being, well, you know, we can give a Dharma talk. I can give a Dharma talk about faith and just keep it on this very, you know, lofty level of like, oh, you know, impermanence or whatever, you know, and without really facing the reality of it, which is that it's a challenge in life to know what to believe and then to act wisely on those beliefs. You know, we're deeply conditioned. When we talk about beliefs, a lot of what we're talking about is how we view cause and effect. And when we're at the beginning of faith, we don't know about what's going to cause what and what the effect is going to be. I don't know what's going to happen if I stop drinking. I don't know what's going to happen if I sit down and try to meditate. So I'm trying to learn about cause and effect at that point. But a lot of other issues in our lives also, you know, depend upon my belief in cause and effect. And then this bleeds into the political world as well, where some people believe that if you give money to poor people, It weakens them. Other people mean think if you give money to poor people, it gives them a leg up. And that's just an argument about cause and effect. You know, if you lower taxes, it has this effect. Some people think it's helpful. Other people think, you know, and so we wind up realizing that these belief systems, which are founded in faith to some extent, actually have these broad implications. You know, and it can have, you know, impact everything from what you eat to, you know, who you interact with, who you follow, who you listen to in the world. Very complicated. But let's come back to the, so that I don't get, you know, completely lost in, you know, Kevin world. Come back to how this is impacting us right now in our practice, in our recovery. Because I think the most important aspect of faith is our faith in ourselves and our belief in our own capacity. I think probably, you know, when it comes to meditation, a lot of us sort of have ideas about what our capacity is and what we can accomplish in it, and what spiritual growth we could have. And I think it's really helpful to have a very open mind about that. Because usually when people have what I'll call breakthrough experiences in meditation, they come as a surprise to those people. They weren't expecting it. And so be ready to be surprised. Be open to surprise, to possibility in your practice. Keep going. It's an ongoing unfolding. And you don't know what your potential is as a meditator, as a practitioner, as a Dharma practitioner. And things can happen at surprising times and at unexpected moments. So I really invite you to keep that kind of faith in the possibility of your own growth, of your own happiness, of your own freedom. You know, that it's really unknown, and there are tremendous possibilities that can open up. So I'll leave it at that with those inspirational words, with a few minutes left for people to chime in if you like. I see a raised hand, Deborah. Hello.
Thank you, Kevin. Faith, I think, is probably the one thing that I never expected to come out of recovery. And it just brings me back to the moment of sobriety when I realized how much I lived in fear, and that it was like the fear that change was possible. I couldn't imagine what life would be like without addiction, without all those things to help me get through the day. I had no idea, but I knew somehow I could do it, maybe. I just had to have faith in myself. And God, I had it. And I said that G word, didn't I? And it's not something I usually believe in, but you know, I had in my heart, I had Dharma. I didn't know I had it, but I found a little bit of guidance in Kevin, and then I found the rest of the Dharma in the world. And it's all about faith. And I've been, had been searching for the Dharma for all my life, and now I found it. And it's all about faith. So thank you, Kevin, and thank you, sobriety. So I
Yeah.
love it. And it definitely comes down to discernment and faith. Thank you
Yeah.
very much.
Thanks, Deborah. That's beautiful. That's great. Hello. What's up?
Hi.
We missed you at Southern Dharma.
Yes, this
Not
actually.
to dig in the knife, but I know you missed us too, so.
I did two attempts this year and two failed attempts. And it kind of ties into what I wanted to share. There were so many things I wrote down that you shared. I was listening to, I mean, everything you said, I was like, oh, I really needed to hear this today. I had therapy at like 10 a.m. and like you literally said almost the same things my therapist said, so that was interesting.
And you didn't even have to pay me $100.
I don't. But one of the things you started in the Dharma talk was you were talking about how you can have some sobriety under your belt, and like you kind of, you kind of struggle, or you lose things. And that's I'm coming up on 9 years, and my father had a heart attack, and then he this year, and then he also had like a major surgery last week, and it's just been a really, and then my not to give too much, but my nephew tried to commit suicide. So there's been like a lot of stress, and I didn't realize I was depressed. I didn't realize it, and I was so angry at first that, I'm doing this recovery thing, I'm meditating, I'm doing yoga, and I went to my doctor to get my labs done, thinking like it's going to be health related. Like something like that. And she's like, no, I just think you have high anxiety and you're going through a depressive episode, which I haven't had one in like 15 years. And so to like admit like I need extra support, and to admit that I need some outside help, and to get through this hard period of time was really hard for me. But I knew that I needed to have faith in the process, and know that it's not long term. And I think that that was the discernment piece. But I was angry at first that, I'm doing all the things, and why isn't that fixing me? And the last thing I was going to say is that, well, no, there was one thing I wanted to say, and then question one. The other thing was that when I was leaving a yoga cult, I came to you for your support, and you helped me literally leave a community of really people that I built my sobriety around. And that was really hard because I put my faith in others and trusted them. And luckily, my path led me to other people that I could trust that had my best interest at heart. And then you said heart practices, and I'd love to get some recommendation on heart practices or heart practice books. And now I'll stop mumbling.
Thanks, Flo. Not mumbling at all, and I really appreciate everything you said. And we got to take care of ourselves, and it's hard to let go sometimes of like, oh, I should be able to meditate my way through this, or do work my steps, and maybe I should do more exercise. That'll fix, and sometimes it's like, you're just freaking depressed, and it's just not lifting, and you got to break out of it. I was gonna mention today Sharon Salzberg's book Faith, just as a it's actually the story of her experience with faith around teachers, and then there is stuff about practice in there. I skipped over all that part because I just wanted to read the stories, so. But I don't know, practices. Ajahn Pasano has a free book called Abundant, Exalted, Immeasurable, which you can download and put it on your Kindle or your iPad, and abundant, exalted, immeasurable. It's on the Abhayagiri website if you know how to navigate all that. That it's taken from a retreat, a loving kindness retreat. So it's just talks. So it kind of rambles here and there, but it's rich. It's rich and beautiful. I also just wanted to, yeah. Well, the thing about cults is that the reason we get into cults is because of our lack of faith in ourselves. And so we project it out onto someone else. We look for someone else to solve our life, to solve our struggle, to answer things for us. And I view, I certainly see that that was where I was when I followed Ananda. And that's where a large chunk of our population is, like desperate for someone to fix things for them. People, that's why people like autocrats, because they promise that they're gonna fix the world for them. And nobody can fix the world, the world is as it is. And it's not as bad as some people like to portray it, I would like to say. At least, anyway, don't let me get start going. You know what I'm talking about. Like, it's like I try. A lot of times I'm talking code here, for everybody knows the code, I think. We have passed the top of the hour, as they say on the radio. Top of the hour is the o'clock, like 11 o'clock. Bottom of the hour is the 30 minutes. I think I said that recently, but it took me a long time to figure that out. The bottom of the hour, like, what are they talking about? It's like, an analog clock. So, all right, educating you in so many different ways. Will I be at the BRN Summit? Good question. That was a direct message, but I will speak it to it publicly. I am scheduled to be at the BRN Summit. That is the plan. That I have certain travel problems I'm having, but yes, I'm going to be there. And tonight, September 10th, I will be at the Berkeley Buddhist Monastery at 7:30 p.m., which I think will allow me to listen to the political discourse that's going to happen beforehand. Most of it, enough of it. But anyway, anybody in the Berkeley area who would like to meditate with me, and I think I'm probably going to talk about faith, because once I find a good topic, I like to hang on to it for a while. But so maybe you don't want to come, because it'll just be the same thing. But who knows? By then I may have thought of something else. It often happens. In any case, I'm off to my physical therapy. And I wish you all a wholesome, happy, abundant, exalted, immeasurably happy day. Blessings. And this Friday night is also Spirit Rock. I think I mentioned that, but I'll mention it again. 7:15 on Friday night on Zoom.
Namaste.
It's on my website. It's on the Spirit Rock website. So, blessings all. Take care.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right,
Thanks,
Monica.
Kevin.
Thank
That
you.
was
Thank you so much.
awesome.
Thank you.
It was
Thanks,
great
Deb.
today. Thank you
Thank
so much.
you, Kevin. Bye, everybody.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kevin.
Mike, peace out.